Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Wednesday football, right? You know, like back in the day, and I speak from experience. I speak from experience as a failed outside sales rep. If anybody can relate to a Wednesday matinee, it's outside sales reps. You know, I know exactly who I'm talking to, and you're already nodding your heads. You know, I know, we all know, if you're an outside sales rep, you know you're supposed to be pounding the bricks, but instead, in the middle of the week, in the middle of the day, you're going to mix in a movie, or you're going to mix in nine, or both, and then roll into the office right before the end of the day and drop some tiny little sale that you made and you've been holding on to for like a week. Right? Onto your boss's desk and say, man, it was an ass kicker out there. Man, I made 100 calls. Man, every door slammed shut, but I got this one. Got this one, boss. When in reality, that's not what you did, man. You changed out of your work clothes. You played 9, or you played 18, or you went to a movie, and then you showed up. And then you got back into your work clothes. And then you showed up, and you dropped that tiny little sale on the boss's desk that you've been holding onto for a week. Am I right, outside sales rep? Tell me I'm right. Hit me up, man. Tweet it to me. You know I'm right. Because I lived that life, except for the part about the sale. I never got any sales. But I did go to the movies in the middle of the day. Anyway, that's what yesterday was. That's what we got with the Ravens-Steelers. A Wednesday matinee or a diversion or something you wanted to do instead of what you were supposed to do. Smack dab in the middle of a workday. A freaking NFL game at 12:40 Pacific time. The pandemic season has meant that we have now had Thursday night football, Sunday night football, Monday night football, Tuesday night football, and now Wednesday day football. The only thing we're missing is Friday morning football to complete the set. And that Wednesday day football was outstanding. I mean, it was. I mean, it couldn't have gotten off to a better start, right? The Ravens get the ball first. They go 3 and out. Great. The Steelers get the ball. They go 3 and out. Awesome. You know, for a moment there, I was thinking, what the hell are we doing? What's the point of this? Man, give me an A or give me an F. And that was a C minus. If you're going to get together on a Wednesday afternoon for an NFL game, do not give us some bum ass, average, boring NFL game. Man, give us something real. Real good or real bad, but something real. Bad football is better than no football at all, but boring football isn't. Not in the middle of the week, not in the middle of the day. And yes, I'm well aware that Bob Griffin was starting for Baltimore, so that made it different. But after the first series, after seeing Bob out there one series, I need more than that. Give me something to work with. And sure enough, after the first two drives, the Ravens and the Steelers started to get nice. After trading 3 and outs, Baltimore gets the ball back, and they do this on first down.
Bad handoff here. It's loose, and it belongs to the Steelers. So on the mistake at the next point, Robert Griffin loses it with Edwards, and Vince Williams comes up with the recovery for Pittsburgh.
That's NBC. And that's what I'm talking about. He put it on the ground. And that was just the start. Because a few plays after that, Big Ben then did this.
Fourth and goal from the one. Roethlisberger surveys. Running out of time. Ben keeps it alive. And it's an interception. Tyus Bowser with the pick.
Hey, listen, we can argue about whether or not that was a terrible play or not. After all, it was fourth down. So there's no point in taking a sack. You may as well try and make something happen. But there is no denying that what Bob Griffin did next was a truly terrible play. Because two plays after Ben chucks his INT, Griffin goes next level.
From the 12, RG3 sets, throws, it's intercepted. Third turnover of the game, and it is taken back all the way for a touchdown by Joe Hayden, the three-time Pro Bowl corner. Picks off Robert Griffin the third and scores to give the Steelers the 6-0 lead.
Westwood won, and that's my guy. That's my guy, Bob Griffin. Anything you can do, I can do worse. That is the Wednesday afternoon football that I am here for. That's the middle of the week, middle of the day, because we didn't want to jerk with a Christmas tree lighting football that I'm talking about. That truly was some Cheez-It Bowl presented by Poulon Weed Eater level stuff right there. You know, that sixth place team in the SEC against some Mountain West team that nobody gives a damn about, playing in a bowl game in the middle of November, stinking up the joint. Now we're on to something. And there was still more insanity to come in that sequence. So far we've had a fumble, an interception in the end zone, a pick six. You know what we're missing? Something from the special teams. And then a couple of plays later, we get that too.
Sam Cook kicking to Ray McCloud. Good kick. 56 yards. McCloud lost it. There's the ball on the ground. Picked up by the Ravens at the 10-yard line. Anthony Levine Sr. comes up with it. Sam Cook usually kicks a difficult-to-catch ball.
Oh, hell yes, McCloud, man. I am having the best time of my life.
That's a great opportunity for the Ravens.
I'm having the time of my life. If we were playing like Wednesday day football bingo, your card would have caught fire. Fumble, interception, pick six, muffed punt. And the Ravens turned that into seven a few plays later. I'm telling you, at that point, I'm all in. While Thursday night football is one of the worst things ever, I'm thinking after what I'm seeing right here, Wednesday day football is the best thing ever. And not because it was so good, but because it was so bad. So bad that it was awesome. Like, I was hoping this never ends. I didn't want that ever to end. You know when you find your favorite show and you binge your favorite show, like The Queen's Gambit, whatever your show is, and maybe it's only six episodes or seven episodes, and you're so locked in and you're binging, and then bam, it's over. You're so pissed. You want more so badly. That was yesterday. Man, I'm thinking to myself, I hope this never ends. Best show ever. Like I said, I'm looking for an A or an F, and that was an A plus of an F, right? Best stuff ever. Unfortunately, they all settled down. Unfortunately, the rest of the game did not go that way. It couldn't keep pace with the first quarter. Certainly not after Bob popped his hammy in the second quarter.
Second one. Griffin keeping on the edge.
Oh, no.
He got hurt. Yeah, he's come up a little bit late as he was cutting to the outside over the 23-yard line. As we get inside the two-minute warning, you can just see the disappointment on Robert Griffin in the third's face.
You can see the disappointment on Robert Griffin III's face. You should have seen the disappointment on my face. I was having so much fun. That was grim, though. He tried to gut it out, but the fact is Bob Griffin cannot do Bob Griffin things from the sideline with a big-ass bag of ice taped to his hammy. And from that point on, the game just wasn't the same. It makes sense, right? Who can keep up that level of awesome for 60 minutes? It's like I always say, if something seems too good to be true, generally it is. There was no way they were going to give us 60 minutes of that perfection. So then it just devolved from a beautiful game of muffed punts and pick sixes into some unwatchable, ugly rock fight. Pittsburgh ends up winning ugly, 19-14. They remain unbeaten. Honestly, Baltimore put up a better fight than anybody expected. They hadn't practiced in forever. They were missing a huge chunk of their roster. They had their backup quarterback starting. Then he had to leave the game for a third stringer. The amazing thing is, not only did they remain competitive, they damn near could have ripped that game late. Had James Washington not ripped that reception from about half the Ravens' defense. So, there are no moral victories in the standings, but you got to give the Ravens credit for how they showed up, how they battled. Except, know this, they were pissed. They were pissed afterwards, and they were pissed about a bunch of things. They were pissed that they hadn't practiced in a while, and that the only prep they had was a walkthrough on Monday and Tuesday. Griffin also says, you know what? I normally never, ever pop a hammy. So the fact that we didn't have practice probably had something to do with me popping my hammy.
You know, I pulled a hamstring today. I've never pulled a hamstring in my life. And it just, you see guys going down left and right.
Guy's not wrong, right? Numerous Ravens players suffered numerous and various injuries. He was bent. Chuck Clark had similar thoughts.
I mean, I don't know what comes with me saying this, but I mean, of course, on Monday and Tuesday, we wonder why were we allowed back in the building, you know, if we say everything is based back off of contact tracing and things like that. And then that's what's told us, you know. we got to look at some of those things.
Look, I know where these guys are coming from. I can see why the players might be thinking that the league didn't have their best interest and safety on top of their priority list. Because while the Ravens were dealing with an epic outbreak, the league made it pretty clear. Come hell or high water or a Christmas tree lighting, man, we're playing this game. Somehow, some way, we're going to get this game in. As for the Steelers, they're 11-0. They're 2-0 against their rival. They're having an incredible year. They may even be an incredible team. But if you think Mike Tomlin is happy, think again. If you think Tomlin is happy, you do not know Tomlin.
Disappointed in our performance tonight. We did enough to win, but that's all. It was really junior varsity, to be quite honest with you. And it was in all three phases. We couldn't run the ball effectively when we needed to. We dropped too many significant passes, very catchable, makeable passes. We didn't make significant plays in the special teams game. Our kickoff coverage unit wasn't good enough. We turned the damn ball over. We gave up big plays in critical moments on defense. Can't have it. They converted a long run on a possession down before the half. Unacceptable. They had a 70-yard touchdown late in the game. Unacceptable.
Holy crap. Man, that is some straight fire. And he was only getting started. There was even more heat coming.
It was just bad by all parties involved, man. Coaches first, players second. We make no excuses. We seek no comfort. We didn't play well or coach well tonight.
And then when asked what he attributed the team's red zone struggles to, he had a simple answer.
You had red zone failures and a number of drop passes. What do you attribute that to? Anything in particular?
Us sucking.
Oh, hell yes. As always, saying something sucks is not a take, but an NFL head coach answering a question with a single line of us sucking is one of the best takes ever. Nearly as good as Danny Green losing his mind back in the day during his post-game presser. Difference is, Tomlin won. He's still undefeated and still furious. Man, that was my man's straightest and hottest fire ever.
Us sucking.
Freaking ether for everybody, players and coaches alike, after a win to get to 11-0.
Us sucking.
If Wednesday day football means that we get Mike Tomlin blasting his team like that after a win, sign me up for a full season of it. So I guess the real winner yesterday was Dolly Parton, Kelly Clarkson, and NBC. No matter how lame you think tree lightings are, it could not have been any worse than that Wednesday afternoon junior varsity game. Can you imagine how bent Meghan Trainor, Earth, Wind, and Fire, and the Rockettes would have been if they got pushed to the afternoon for that crap? I didn't watch the Rockefeller tree lighting show, but I'm guessing unless the lights didn't work, it probably was better TV viewing. Ask Mike Tomlin. If you think that I was not going to lay out a Wednesday game the way I just did, then you don't know me or Tomlin. That was Wednesday afternoon football. Working 9 to 5. Stop it, Rit. I think we'd all agree this has been some crazy, crazy year with a whole lot of stress. And the stress of daily life weighs on every last one of us. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are or what you do, whether you're an elite athlete or just a regular person trying to get through the day, muscle pain and muscle tension is a real thing. I'm no different. This is why I use Theragun. What an amazing product. It's a handheld percussive therapy device which releases your deepest muscle tension using a scientifically calibrated combination of depth, speed, and power. And right now, it does all that, and it's as quiet as an electric toothbrush. That's because the all-new Gen 4 Theragun has a proprietary brushless motor that is so quiet, you're going to wonder if, in fact, it's even on. All while soothing your aching muscles with Theragun's signature power, amplitude, and effectiveness. This product blows my mind. Try Theragun yourself for 30 days. There is no substitute for the Theragun Gen 4 with an OLED screen, personalized Theragun app, and the quiet and power that you need. It starts at only $199. Go to Theragun.com/Rome. Theragun.com/Rome right now. Get your Gen 4 Theragun today. I've got mine. I use it. I love it. That's Theragun.com/Rome. Theragun.com/Rome. Rashawn Evans is my guest. Rashawn, great to have you back. How are you?
Man, I'm doing good, man. Glad to be back.
It's always good to have you on the show. All right, so I know you're already thinking about and focused on Cleveland Sunday, but if you could, can you take me back to the win over the Colts on Sunday? Indy is a tough, physical football team, and you guys hammered them in their own house. Do you feel like you made a statement against a good team? And if so, what was the statement?
Yeah, I mean, I still got to give kudos to the Colts, man. I mean, you know, being able to go against a really good team like that, you know, two times a year, it is, you know, it is one of those things where, you know, you're going to lose some guys at the end of that type of game, man. I told even reporters before the week was even going to start, it's going to be a slugfest, it's going to be a bloodbath, just a simple fact of the physicality on both sides of the team, man. And, you know, that's exactly what happened that game, man. It was a really good game being able to play against, you know, guys on the other side of that field, man, who are really good at what they do. And, you know, the big thing was, you know, the team was able to come out with a win, and we were able to come out and, you know, get ready for this week coming up.
Rashawn Evans joining us. Physicality is always a topic when you and I talk. In fact, you and I talked at the Super Bowl earlier this year. You yourself bring tremendous physicality every time you step on the field. At the same time, your offense does as well. So how much does the offense feed off the physicality of the defense? And then how much do you feed off the physicality of your offense?
I mean, it's hand to hand, man. I think, you know, whenever you get your defense going, you get that rhythm, you get that momentum, as we like to call it, it feeds off to the rest of the team. Not only does it feed off to the offense, it feeds off to the special teams players as well. So, I mean, both sides go hand-in-hand. You know, even when the offense, when Derrick Henry goes and stiffs on a guy to the sideline, to the stands, you know, we get hyped about that. So, you know, it's one of those things where both sides are just as important, man, when it comes to rhythm and momentum, because it can change the dynamics of a game.
Rashawn Evans joining us. All right, so in terms of the physicality, that's one thing, but you also have, like, a mentality. There's a mindset. Something else that's been pretty noticeable the last couple of games is that before each game, there seems to be a pregame meeting on first the Ravens logo, then on the Colts logo. Personally, I love it, man. I think it's a statement of attitude, unless you're going to tell me that it's just a big old coinky-dink. What's going on here? Is this a statement you're trying to make, or is this just a coincidence?
Well, you know, even with, you know, the Jim Harbaugh situation where we was on the logo and stuff, that is something that we do anyway. You know, that we do, we've been doing this since I've been here. And, you know, it's just one of those situations where, you know, I still got to give respect to the Ravens. You know, they have a lot of pride in the organization, as they should. And, you know, they didn't really like what we were doing. We did the same things, you know, really in 2018 where, you know, it was a situation with the Cowboys. We were on the star, and one of the players came over, pushed KB or whatever. So, you know, I mean, we know teams are going to have a bad reaction, but, you know, it's one of those situations where, you know, at the same time, we're still going to operate in our business, do our business, and win games. And, you know, sometimes it may ruffle a couple feathers over there on the other side, but, you know, at the end of the day, we come there to handle business.
I appreciate that response. I mean, what we're talking about here is just you're looking for an edge, right? You're looking to impose your will. It's mental warfare. Am I right?
No doubt it's mental warfare. And, you know, whenever you get your opponents already, you know, upset before the game even starts, you've already, you know, started out on the good ride. So, I mean, for us, all we can worry about is us and what we do. And, you know, whatever else happens after that, you know, the only thing we're worried about is a W.
We're talking to Rashawn Evans. You know, in terms of mental warfare, you and Will Compton were talking about how the coaches used to get on you pretty hard in meetings when you were a rookie.
Yeah.
I'm curious, like, what was that like? And then how much did you learn from that part of the mental warfare, as Compton liked to call it?
I think it was a beautiful thing, man, because of it allows you as a player, as a young player, to, you know, kind of learn how to take criticism, take coaching, take sarcasm, take all of those things into account. And to understand that, you know, this is like your development going into, you know, going into a new, totally different type of atmosphere compared to college. And for me, I feel like it helped me a lot because it helped me to not be so hard on myself, to be even more patient, to be understanding and not take things so seriously. You know what I'm saying? Not take it to heart. A lot of these things that, you know, some of the people may be saying to you, it might not be so much about them trying to be mean. It might be simply about them trying to give you actually really good, you know, criticism about some things you could change or be better at, or, you know, and that you can do. So, you know, I took all of that into account for me and my own experience, and I feel like it's made me the player that I am today, man. I'm able to go out there, have fun doing what I'm doing, man, regardless of what's going on. So, you know, I think that's kind of what I've taken out of that whole situation.
I like it. Rashawn Evans joining me for another few moments. Now, my guy and your friend, Jaylen Brown, is going to miss the rest of the season with that elbow injury. Yeah, man, how big of a blow is that for the team, and how do you go about replacing him?
Yeah, I mean, guy has the ability to, you know, change games, I feel like. You know, he's a playmaker, and, you know, whenever you lose a guy like that, it does hurt. And, you know, it's one of those things where it was kind of an accident that happened. You know, it was nothing really that, you know, I feel like it could have got prevented, just the simple way of how the guy blocked Jaylen and the way he came up under him after the play. But, you know, it's one of those things, that's what happens in the NFL, man. You 100% guarantee that it's going to be some type of injury, whether it's, you know, season ending or if it's something that's just temporary. But, you know, I'm pretty sure Jaylen is in good spirits. I had the chance to talk to him maybe for, you know, a couple of days and just getting kind of where his head is at. So, but I think he's going to be just fine, man. And then just with that, back on to, you know, the type of guy we're losing, you know, you got an opportunity for other guys to be able to come in and, you know, show their stuff. You know, you got David Long, you got Will. And those guys are going to be able to, you know, pick up where we left off with Jaylen. And, you know, it's like they always say in the NFL, man, it's next man up. So, you know, I'm excited to see and you know, have alongside me, you know, David and Will, so we can go out there and get a win.
Rashawn Evans joining us. All right, so you've got the Browns on Sunday. What is the key to stopping their offense?
Yeah, I think their heavy-sided part about them and what they're really good at, man, they got two really good running backs. They got Chubb, they got Hunt back there, and both of those guys are on the verge of going for 1,000 yards apiece. So, I mean, those guys, I've seen multiple videos of those guys running through, you know, every arm tackle, every single tackle that they've had, they've been able to run through it and get yards after the tackle. So, you know, the number one thing is our tackling, making sure we wrap up, making sure we do all those little things. And, you know, trying to get Baker a hard time, you know, that's the number one thing, too, you know, going against these quarterbacks, because these quarterbacks are getting better and better each and every year. They're changing formations, they're doing things to try to get linebackers to, you know, get their eyes wandering in places they're not supposed to be. So we just got to be sound and be, you know, make sure that we communicate really well amongst each other on, you know, things that they may be trying to trick us on. And, you know, once we do those things, I feel like we'll be fine.
Hey, Rashawn, one quick follow to that. I think that obviously you got a monster in your backfield. I love your guy. I think Kareem Hunt in space obviously is a real problem for a lot of teams. Mm-hmm. I think Chubb, you tell me I'm wrong. I think Chubb is a top five back, far and away.
Oh, no doubt.
Maybe I'm not saying something that isn't obvious, but I really think this guy is a top five NFL back. Do you?
I feel the same way, man. You know, being coming from the SEC, I saw this guy before he even went to the league. I saw him at Georgia with the things he was doing with him, his son, and Michelle. You know, the guy has the ability to wreck your defense with his feet. And, you know, he's a really stocky, you know, built guy that can, you know, run through tackles. So for us, we just got to make sure we sound on tackling, man. And, you know, I think everything else would be fine.
Rashawn Evans, my guest. This is why I look forward to getting in and chopping it up with you any chance I can. Rashawn, thank you so much. Another great, great interview for the program. And I thank you for doing it, man. Be good. Good luck.
Man, no doubt, man. I appreciate you always having me on here.
Robert Tonyan is my guest. Robert, it's so good to have you on. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Really good to have you. So you had a big game, as I mentioned, on Sunday. Another one against the Bears. You had the 5 receptions, including that 39-yard TD in the third quarter. Can you take us through the play? What did you see on that play?
We had a good, you know, play designed up with all of our, you know, keepers and stuff like that and all of our play action stuff. And, you know, just the right call at the right time. Aaron put a good ball out there and, you know, sealed the deal.
Robert, you sealed the deal, and he did put a good ball out there. I got to ask you, though, Sunday was another in a season full of enormous games for you, including that 3-TD game against the Falcons on Monday night back in October. You came into the season with 2 touchdowns since entering the league, and now you've broken out in such a big way. What has this year been like for you overall?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's going as planned and as I wanted and as I visualized, and, you know, I get to come into a building with a great group of guys, a great group of coaches, and who encouraged me to be me and be myself and be the best Robert Tonyan. So I can't ask for much more than that for, you know, the guys in this building.
Robert Tonyan joining us. I think, in a sense, you're kind of understating what you've had to go through. As an example, one of the things that Aaron Rodgers talks about as it relates to you and your approach is the fact that you dealt with that hip injury. and you just kept battling through it. Aaron said, quote, when you see a guy pushing through an injury like that, not making excuses and trying to suit up every single week, you can't help but gain a lot of respect for them, end quote. That's really high praise from a guy like that. What was your approach to dealing with that injury and playing through it? And did you get the sense that guys noticed the work you were putting in and how much they respected it?
Yeah, I mean, last year was tough. You know, you go through an injury. I've never had an injury before in my life. So last year was the first time where, you know, I had dealt with that kind of adversity. And, you know, when that stuff comes, the only thing I really know what to do is kind of work through it. So, like Aaron said, just not making excuses about it and just trying to go out there and do what's best for the team, even if it's, you know, whatever, you know, five plays or whatever, just to be on the field with the guys. But I think that just kind of led over into the off season, getting the surgery, and then leading into a good, you know, work ethic and mindset coming into this season.
Robert Tonyan, my guest, you know, you mentioned that you never had an injury before, but it's not like you hadn't dealt with adversity before. Having right. gone through what you went through to get here, did that help you prepare for an injury, even if you had never had one before?
Yeah, just, you know, staying the course. It's a long season. It's, you know, it's the NFL. You know, things happen. It's a physical, you know, violent game. But, you know, I just had to come to grips with that some things happen for a reason, and, you know, just how I respond to it is what's going to be the ultimate outcome for me.
Yeah, I should probably not assume that everybody knows your story, but what I'm talking about here is, and people are familiar with it, but for those who aren't, you were a quarterback at McHenry East in Illinois. You're putting up big numbers, but the team didn't have a lot of success. So back in the day, what kind of attention were you getting from colleges when it came to recruiting?
You know, just, you know, the basic average, you know, a couple small school offers here and there, and, you know, just, you know, if I get, like, some attention from a, you know, a MAC school, it was awesome. But, you know, it's all part of the process. You know, people go different ways and have different paths. So, you know, at the end of the day, my ultimate goal was to get to the NFL, you know, one way or another.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's so many different ways and so many different paths, and you never know where you're going to find a good player.
Exactly.
Story goes, though, that your dad, Bob, made a master list of every D1 school. Your mom, Tammy, would email the head coach, the quarterback's coach, the recruiting coordinator at every single school, and you would be searching for schools that needed a quarterback. I mean, like, the whole family is all in. What was that part of the process like?
Yeah, I mean, we went through it with my sister. She played Division I volleyball at Bowling Green, so she's 2 years older than me. So we went through that process with her. So it was a little bit, I wouldn't say easier, but, like, we knew it was coming, and, you know, we just tried to get, you know, my name out there as much as possible just to, you know, get, you know, our foot in the door. And it worked out in the end.
Let me ask you this. Like, your family made great, great sacrifices. Sometimes your mom would drive you to one-day camps at various schools. Like, what were the road trips like with your mom, and what did that mean for your relationship with your mom?
Yeah, I mean, some people don't get the time to, you know, spend with their parents very often, especially in, like, this day and age. There's just so much going on and so much distraction. But, you know, I was just, you know, forced, not in a bad way, but to be in a car ride, you know, driving around the country with my mom for a couple summers. And, you know, you don't get to have those talks very often, you know, with your kids and your parents. So it was nice that all that time spent in a car, you're forced to talk, you're forced to, you know, just any relationship. And it was good that it was with my mom. And, you know, the relationship that we have now just, you know, drives me every day when I come in the building, you know, to just give it that one more percent just for my mom.
I love hearing that. That's great the way you laid that out, and it's so true. I mean, I'm a parent, and I've got a teenage son. I've got another son in college. I know a lot of parents listening right now have got that same feeling, like you don't have that kind of quality connection or time.
Right.
And it is so important. So when you go through that, and just to get a shot in college, then you go undrafted, then you get hurt, and then you grind. Now we're talking about you being a Pro Bowl candidate. First off, what would it mean to you, or what does it mean to you to be a candidate, and how much would it mean to you to go to the Pro Bowl?
Yeah, it is crazy, that, you know, from where I was, you know, just a couple of years ago to where I'm at now. I mean, it is an honor. You know, to go to the Pro Bowl would be awesome, but there's only really one bowl that we're worried about here in Green Bay. And, you know, we're trying to get that ring on our finger.
Robert Tonyan joining me for a few more moments. It helps when you've got one of the best ever who's getting you the ball. Seems like Aaron Rodgers has taken his game to another level this season, but you said that you knew he was going to have a huge year before the year began. What did you see that made you think that he had a season like this coming?
Just kind of his attitude and, you know, his demeanor coming into the building. It was much more, you know, wouldn't say laid back, but more calm and having fun, where he was more of himself. He was more comfortable around, you know, the coaching staff, the people in the building. There's a lot more trust around, you know, the offense. And I just think the camaraderie of the team is stronger, so it kind of allows Aaron to be more of himself.
It's really interesting. You know, I had him on earlier, Robert, and I've been talking to him for years. He talks a lot about being mindful and being present. I mean, do you sense that change in him as well? Is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely. And that's something I worked on this offseason, was just kind of, you know, the mental and spiritual aspect of being an athlete. And, you know, to be able to, you know, talk with him about it, someone who's, you know, does the same stuff, you know, the mental practice and all that, it's a good, you know, it's a good thing to have someone of that caliber going through the same thing or has gone through the same stuff mentally, that, you know, you can, you know, pick apart and, you know, get better at even that.
And one thing I want to ask you about before you go, since you mentioned that, my greatest source of fascination with guys like you and other athletes at the highest level is not necessarily the physical, but what you're talking about, the mental, the spiritual. So when you say that you put in that time over the offseason and really focused on that part of the game, like, what types of things did you do? Who did you read? What did you do? How did you get better mentally?
Yeah, just, you know, read some different books. I got with a mental coach and just kind of worked on my mental toughness and, you know, spirituality, just kind of just figuring out what works for me, what gets me in a right mindset. And my mental coach, is George Kittle's father, Bruce. He's my mental coach. So it was just kind of getting in that, you know, different mindsets and how I can deal through adversity and how I can just, you know, let thoughts come and go. It's just, you know, the power of the mind is super, super crazy and super real, and not many people understand, like, that's the strongest muscle of your body. You got to take care of that just as much as you do any part of your body.
Dude, I was just going to say, the mind is the most important muscle, so how do we strengthen that muscle? Like, how do you get mentally tougher? What's the process for that?
Reps. I mean, just would it be like if you have to get, you know, bench reps or, you know, squat reps or running routes or catching balls, like, just got to put yourself in, you know, different aspects in your mind, and a lot of meditating, a lot of being with yourself, and a lot of self-talk to, you know, see, you know, how strong your mind is and where your mind can take you, and, you know, visualizing, manifesting, you know, success and where you want to be in life and just going after it.
Great point. So finally, what about Kittle? You mentioned his dad, but what about George? You and he are good friends, and I know that if you're doing work with his dad, you're definitely doing training with George as well. What have you learned from your time with George specifically?
He just instilled a lot of stuff in me, just to trust myself and just go be myself. You know, having all the tools, and, you know, sometimes people's minds get in the way of, you know, their athleticism or their play. And for him and me, he was just, you know, telling me to be myself, encouraging me to just let loose and go out there and just, you know, act wild on the field and, you know, set the tone and be a leader and be a good glue guy in the locker room and just, you know, keep stacking days day by day, and eventually it'll lead to big success.
And then finally, the Wisconsin life. Like, I got to ask you, for instance, I've got a son at the University of Wisconsin. We built a house in northern Wisconsin. I'm a California guy. Man, I love the Wisconsin life. I know you're locked in. I know it's work. But what's the Wisconsin life been like for you?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up, you know, just over the border in Illinois. We, you know, family cabins up in northern Wisconsin as well.
Where?
Saner, Wisconsin.
Okay.
Just north of Minocqua. Yeah, just on Plum Lake.
And love it.
Yeah.
We're in Eagle River. Here.
Yep. And I'm just, I've been around all this stuff up here and, you know, been around Packers fans, been around all the Packers bars growing up and seeing all this this lifestyle, and it's great to be a part of it. I was actually driving in this morning and seeing all the houses on Oneida Street and Lombardi, like, leading up to the stadium, and all the, you know, the Packers flags out there and all the Packers Christmas decorations. I just laugh because and smile because, like, these fans have been dedicated for so long, and, you know, it means the world to them, like, our success. So it's just, you know, again, like I said, just another, you know, stepping stone or backbone, I should say, to, you know, our success is the fan base.
I never made that day trip to Minocqua when we were in Eagle River. And by the way, everybody in Eagle River is, like, from Chicago and Illinois. Am I missing? Should I have gone to Minocqua? Is that something I have to do?
Yeah, I mean, northern Wisconsin, the more north you go, you know, the more peaceful and more, you know, out there you are away from, you know, just the general population. I kind of like, when I go up there, I kind of like to get away and just get out. And, you know, it's nice up there. More north, the better.
I love it. The more north, the better. Robert Tonyan, my guest, tight end for the Packers. My man, so appreciate the conversation. That was fun. That was great. You nailed it. You crushed it. Really good to have you on the show. Robert, thanks so much for making time for us.
No, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Jim Rome here. Why is Old Trapper beef jerky so good? Well, for one, there's something to be said for a family business that stands by quality and produces the world's finest beef jerky. Do not be fooled by the other brands. All beef jerky is not the same. Make sure you choose Old Trapper, where you can actually see the quality right through their iconic clear view packages. Every single bite of Old Trapper is tender. It's never tough because they use only the best ingredients, from their lean strips of beef seasoned with top quality spices to the real wood-fired smoke. Old Trapper delivers quality in every single bite. And Old Trapper jerky comes in four great flavors: Old Fashioned with a hint of brown sugar sweetness, Teriyaki peppered, and if you need a little more zing, there's Hot and Spicy. All are chock full of good protein to satisfy your manliest hunger cravings and to provide real sustained energy. Old Trapper is a better way to snack. Make sure Old Trapper is part of your weekly grocery list and keep a good supply on hand for you and your family. If you do not see it, ask for Old Trapper by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what is your beef? Let me just start some thoughts on the Lakers before I go to break. Lakers have had a really short offseason, right? Like their season ended on October 11th, and their first preseason game is December 11th. So we're talking about 2 months, roughly half of what a normal offseason is for a finals champ. You know, not for any other team, but for a finals champ. They're getting half the time they normally would. But Rob Pelinka has been busy as hell. They brought in the sixth man of the year, Montrezl Harrell. They brought in the sixth man of the year, runner-up, Dennis Schroeder. They brought in Marc Gasol. They brought in Wesley Matthews. They re-signed KCP. They re-signed Markieff Morris. And then in the last 24 hours, they made the moves that everybody was expecting. First, there was the news that LeBron had agreed to a two-year extension with the Lakers. Then the news that Anthony Davis had agreed to a five-year extension with the Lakers. And both were expected, but for any Laker fan freaking out and sweating that either LeBron or AD would leave, rest assured, that's not happening. Nor should it. Like, why would they? Why would they? They just won a ring. They've got a really good look at another. In fact, I'd make the argument that this year's roster is better than last year's roster. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to win again, but all you can ask for at this point is a chance, and they've got a damn good chance. In fact, they've got better than a damn good chance. The deals with LeBron and AD are not a surprise, but they are interesting. As an example, that two-year extension that LeBron reportedly agreed to is going to run through the end of the 2023 season and reportedly is worth $85 million. Now, some of you might be thinking, $85 million for 2 years? It's a ton of cash, especially for a guy who's got that many miles on him.
Who, me?
Especially for a guy who's going to turn 36 later this month. But in this case, to me, $85 million, it's not too much. In fact, it's not even close to too much. In fact, I'm going to argue that LeBron is worth a hell of a lot more than $85 million. I'm going to argue that LeBron is worth double that amount of money, if not more. And again, that's not hyperbole. That's not exaggeration. Look where the Lakers were before LeBron arrived. They hadn't been in the postseason in years. They were a complete and total mess. Then he shows up and leads them to a ring in his second season. You can't put a price tag on that. How much money is that worth? You can't put a price tag on a moment like this during the trophy presentation.
Genie, I told Jeannie when I came here that I was going to put this franchise back in a position where it belongs. Her late great father did it for so many years, and she just, you know, took it on after that. And for me to be a part of such a historical franchise is it's an unbelievable feeling, not only for myself, but for my teammates, for the organization, for the coaches, for the trainers, everybody that's here. We just want our respect. Rob wants his respect. Coach Vogel wants his respect. Our organization wants their respect. Laker Nation wants their respect. And I want my damn respect, too.
If you don't think that's worth $85 million, then you don't understand business, their business, that brand, their pride, that legacy. I mean, you could pass that hat among Laker fans and come up with way more than 85 mil to pay that guy. Again, as a reminder, when he came to the Lakers, they were coming off a 35-win season. And the thinking was, remember, LeBron was not coming here to win, right? LeBron was coming here to start his retirement. LeBron was coming here to plant his flag, start his production company, or build that production company. He was coming here to finish his career, to start his next career. People clowned him. People called him washed. Laker haters were cackling and looking to celebrate every single loss, and it only got worse. Magic quit the organization so he could tweet. Luke Walton moved on, and the search for a replacement took longer than expected. Frank Vogel gets that job, and then everybody rushes in to say, man, this guy's going to last maybe a month. And then Jason Kidd is going to get his job. Laker haters were having a field day. They were partying so hard. With every bit of bad news, Laker hater partied harder and harder. And then it all changed in year two. All LeBron did was lead that team to a title in his second season. And now we're talking about looking to go back-to-back and maybe starting a mini dynasty.
Not two,
trust me.
Not three, not four. Not
85 five, mil not is three. Not a lot of money for this guy. If anything, he's underpaid. Hand him a blank check. Call that his contract. And one more thing before I go to break. Remember that rap that nobody wanted to play with this guy? That nobody wanted to be this guy's teammate? Remember all that? And that the Lakers' prestige was gone. Nobody wanted to be a part of that. Yeah, how old and cold does that take seem right now? When LeBron's got another ring, and guys are lining up to be on the Lakers, underpaid at 85 mil. And then the most intriguing thing of all, it runs through 2023 when Bronny, his son, could be in the league if the NBA changes the age limit as is expected. You think that might motivate Bron to stay in the league long enough to play with his son? That's a big why. People are always talking about what's your why, what's your why. LeBron's got a lot of whys. I would imagine that's a big why. Big day for the Lakers. Scott Hansen is my guest. Scott, great to have you back. How are you?
Good to be with you, Jim. Still rolling after all these years and still rolling through 2020. As long as we got games, we're showing touchdowns.
Man, that is the truth, right? Not only do we still have games, but we have games on Wednesday. So before I get into Sunday and everything this weekend means to you and the Red Zone Channel, what did you make of Wednesday afternoon football, Scott?
Well, I mean, the game itself left a lot to be desired. We obviously all know about the lack of personnel really on both sides. But you know what? I like Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin doesn't make any excuses. Neither does John Harbaugh. They're like, hey, we're going to play when they tell us we're going to play. And you can say it's unfair, and maybe it is to a certain degree. Maybe there's a gripe in Denver to be had because they had to play their game with no quarterbacks and all this. But it's pretty obvious to the NFL universe that the league is looking at the teams and saying, guys, if you got 11 of them and they're healthy – and they tested negative, put helmets on them, and there's the football field because we're playing this season and we're playing the games. Now, I don't think that the NFL is being willy-nilly and just throwing, safety to the side. The testing they've done is extraordinary and extensive, but the league is basically saying, we are not going to cancel a game short of everybody being wiped out by COVID. We are not canceling a game. So get ready, whatever day it is, whatever circumstance it is, whoever's taking the first snap for you at quarterback is, we're playing this game. And, it's going to happen. I was thankful to have something to do in the middle of the afternoon. I'm here in Los Angeles. We kicked off a little afternoon right here, and I had a buddy over, and we were like, hey, this is great. But hopefully not too much more Wednesday afternoon football.
Hey, man, it was weird. It was awesome. It was weird. I mean, 12:40,
yep.
Scott, was really something. Scott Hansen joining us. Now, you and I have talked about your journey to the Red Zone Channel, and now on Sunday, it is the 200th edition of NFL Red Zone. Earlier this week, you retweeted the opening from week one of the 09 season and the first ep. What do you remember about that day?
You know, it really is extraordinary. And, of course, now that we're getting nostalgic about our 200th episode on NFL Red Zone, you go back to that first moment. Here are the first three things that I remember when I think about it. One was when I came on the air, I was like, Scott, don't screw this up, because this is going to live forever on video, because I really did feel that the channel was going to be a galactic success the way that it is. Because what's not to love, right? Every touchdown from every game, no commercials, 7 straight hours of football. Like, I would watch it, right, if I was sitting at home. So I figured it would be huge. And when I came on for that first on camera, I was like, do not flub up anything. Don't, if you make a mistake, it's going to live forever. Like, for the old timers in the audience, Lee Leonard, the first ever Sports Center anchor, back in 1979, coming on for the first ever Sports Center. All right, when ESPN does all their anniversaries, they always play that clip. And I remember thinking, Hanson, they're going to play this clip a decade from now, 2 decades from now, whatever. And I got through that initial on camera. And then the other thing that I remember about that game, it was Brett Favre's Minnesota Vikings debut. That was the big hype leading into it. We all remember the saga he put us through every summer, whether he was going to play or not play. But that was also the day that Kyle Orton made his Denver Bronco debut, and the Broncos and the Bengals played in a sloppy, mishmash, no offense football game. The score was 7-6. With 11 seconds left to go in the fourth quarter, and Orton threw, just kind of chucked up a pass into double coverage. If you remember, the ball got tipped in the air, and Brandon Stokley ran underneath it and ran 87 yards for a touchdown to win the game with like 10 seconds left on the clock. And that was Broncos Bengals. That was getting no attention in the National Football League world at that time, but because of NFL Red Zone bouncing you around to the best parts of every game, our audience saw that live in real time, and we thought, wow, this is going to be awesome if we get moments like this. And that was the first ever, and it's still one of the greatest jaw-dropping plays on NFL Red Zone.
Scott Hanson joining us. Episode number 200 of NFL Red Zone is coming up this weekend. And Scott, I mentioned off the top that you played your college ball at Syracuse, and you and I have touched on your time there in the past, but I want to bring it up again because I want to talk to you about Marcus Paul. As many NFL fans know, he was the strength and conditioning coordinator of the Dallas Cowboys. He passed away suddenly last week. He was a star at Syracuse. What do you remember about meeting him the first time?
Yeah, All-American at Syracuse, and a guy, he showed me everything I needed to know about him the first time I met him, because you need to understand, we had 95 scholarship guys back then, and we had about 99 guys on the team, so I was one of 4 walk-ons, okay? I was the lowest man on the totem pole. I was Rudy, right, getting smashed in practice constantly, and Marcus and I actually never played together. I missed him by 1 year. So he left, but he was back on campus, and I remember him. I introduced myself because I wanted to meet a guy who's All-American, NFL player at the time, you know, and he looked me right in the eye. Some of my teammates on the team at the time had no time for me because I was a scrub walk-on, and he was like, hey, man, you work your best. You play hard. These coaches are going to get you right. You have an awesome time here, an awesome career here. Said it with a smile on his face, and I remember thinking, this guy, like – you know, he didn't need to have any time for me. He was an All-American and a draft pick. He's in the NFL. And so when I got into the NFL in my broadcasting career through the years, I would bump into him, whether he was at the Giants as a strength coach or the Cowboys. The last time I saw him was about 2 years ago in the spring. I was happened to be at the Star in Frisco, the Cowboys headquarters, and wandered into the weight room at one time, said a quick hi to him and whatnot. And when I heard the news, it was tough. It was tough last week to hear the news, because if you hear the name Marcus Paul, the real football fans will remember, okay, All-American at Syracuse and had a nice NFL career. But his impact on pro football, Jim, was the way he encouraged, inspired, and coached and motivated others. And it's a ripple effect. And you saw that on social media when he had his medical episode that ended up ultimately, unfortunately, leading to his death. But in that 24-hour period when we didn't know if he was going to live or die, all of these NFL players coming out with their memories of Marcus Paul. And he was not a star player in the NFL. He was not a superstar, and yet he impacted the game behind the scenes as much as some of the biggest names in pro football. And he's a great loss for the Syracuse football family, a great loss for the professional football world, too.
Scott Hanson, my guest. I want to ask you one follow-up about that, Scott, because what you're talking about is, and you've made this point, too, that there are just certain people in the NFL orbit that fans may not know, but those who do know, but they have a significant and major impact on the league and some star players in it. For those who don't know, how do you explain how those folks that fans don't know have that kind of impact on the game, and how do they impact it?
Well, like anything, I guess I would ask your audience to think about your workplace, and maybe not your workplace in 2020 because everybody is scattered these days, work from home, and you know, all the difficulties we've had. But consider your office, your workplace, your work environment with whatever your career is. 99.99% of it never gets talked about in public. And it might not even get talked about. The productivity that you do doesn't get talked about within your own workplace. But there are certain individuals that you know that are always bringing energy, enthusiasm, aptitude, and their job is to make other people in the office, in the business, better. The NFL is one of the most publicized businesses in our country, if not the world. And yet there are still, it's about relationships and it's about behind the scenes work. These guys play for 3 hours on Sunday. They're working for 80 hours during the week to give you the best 3 hours that they possibly can. And Marcus Paul, a strength and conditioning coach, he spends more time with the football players for the Dallas Cowboys than some of the position coaches do, because he's with them all off season. There are obviously limits and restrictions on how much a football team can practice in the off season with OTAs and mini camps and stuff like that. The strength coach is with these guys all the time. And I've never heard a bad word said about Marcus Paul. And one last thing about it, when he collapsed, it's tough to even talk about, but when he collapsed, they shut the building down. They shut everything down. And it wasn't like they thought, oh, like you hear about a shutdown today because of COVID or something. It sent a ripple effect through the Dallas Cowboys to every corner of that massive, massive building that they have. And they didn't want to go on with their day because they were so concerned about this guy who had poured into these players' lives and into the people's franchises, in the franchise's lives so much. And again, just a sad time and a great loss. I'm thinking of and praying for his family.
Clearly a beloved figure. He is the host of the NFL Red Zone channel. You can follow him on Twitter at Scott Hanson. And it is a big weekend, Sunday, marking the 200th edition of NFL Red Zone, which did launch back in September of 2009. Now, Scott, I don't need to tell you this, but because it's ep number 200, man, don't flub your line because they will be watching it for the next 200 years. You know this.
You got that right.
You know this.
Put the pressure on me like that, Jim.
You know this.
Over 10,000 touchdowns. And wait, let me check my records here. Yep, zero commercials. And that's our promise to each and every one of you who love the game the way we do.
I love it. Listen, have a great weekend. It's a tremendous accomplishment. You should be very proud. I know you are. Have a great weekend with Scott. And I know you and I will talk again soon.
Thanks, Jim. Talk to you soon.
Let's go to the OC, Jordan in Orange County.
Hey, good morning, Jim. Wanted to give you congratulations on your induction to the Hall of Fame to start.
Thank you.
Coming from one, I wanted to call and tell you, as I felt your synopsis of outside sales reps was spot on. You know, in July of this year, around noon, while, I was on an executive golf course in Fountain Valley, of course, while I was in the field selling, I was wrapping up on 18, and someone absolutely shanked a Top Flight XL onto my green. I was on 18 and hit about 5 feet from me. This tall young gentleman walks up, tree trunks for legs and black Steeler Nikes, and I had no idea who this kid was. I'm from Arizona State. I said, hey man, do you ball? He said, yeah, I played at Notre Dame. I just got drafted by the Steelers. Come to find out, it was Chase Claypool at the time, a nobody at the time, hadn't played a game at all. We ended up kind of given him an education on how to hit his ball back over a couple of trees back into his fairway, and ended up giving him a sleeve of Pro V1s. when everything got done. And I'm not the kind of guy to take a picture with anybody, but it was a story that I've always had since then. And, you know, as Chase is blowing up this year, it was kind of nice to take the afternoon yesterday to be in the field selling, watching the guy that almost hit me with his golf ball play in the afternoon game. So wanted
That's
to share
cool.
it. And, Jim, I also wanted to thank the first responders out there fighting the fires out here in Orange County and all those on the front lines as well while I was on the phone.
Good man, Jordan. Appreciate you. Rack him. Good phone call. Always dangerous, but I'm going to roll telephone calls. Let's go to Frank in Pennsylvania to start hour number three. What's going on, Frank? How are you?
Okay, Jim. Love the show, but enough with the basketball. That sissy game. You tell me you're going to pay somebody $50 million to throw a ball through a hoop and nobody's allowed to touch him while he's doing it? Come on, basketball is a playground game, a girl's game.
My man, I don't listen.
Ball and somebody hits his pinky. Oh, my God. Okay, well, you get to stand over here now, and I guarantee you no.
Frank, my man. You don't like that color. Hey, Frank, here's how it is.
Not a very good
Here's how it is, Frank. I like you. I like you. I don't like your take, but I like you. Let's just say you and I agree to disagree. Come on, man. You just said to me basketball is a girl's game or a sissy's game. The guys are paid $50 million to put a ball in a hole and you can't touch them. I don't know, Frank. You take a look at LeBron James. I don't see anything sissy about LeBron James. I don't know, bro. Why don't you roll up on Rick Mahorn and call him a sissy? Why don't you tell Charles Oakley that he plays a girly game? See how that goes for you. Come on, Frank. I'm not saying that it's the most violent sport there is. I'm saying it's a contact sport, and it's a great sport with really physical people playing it. And if you got a problem with the guy making 50 mil that you, quote, can't touch, how about the guy who's paying him the 50 mil? If a guy makes 50 mil, how much money do you think the guy paying him is making that's not getting touched? We need to do better. Let's keep moving. 1-800-636-8686. Mike in the Bay. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Camp, what's that?
What's up? What's up?
Training camps open around the NBA, Jimmy. And my legs are once again looking like title favorites. All's as it should be, but I don't want to talk about LeBron's deal or AD, Jim. I want to talk about KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, my guy. Did you see this dude rolling into practice rocking his brand new KCP designer tee and matching logo silver chain? Wait, what? Do we need to add this guy to the Do Not Self Gloss Club? I mean, give this scrub some bleeping credit for real. His stat line from last season was thinner than Kirstie Alley's Weight Watcher checks. KCP would be flying rubber dog to Hong Kong if it weren't for his agent LeBron. Rich Paul. Dude got paid and rightfully so, but that doesn't make him Roger Federer. War KCP stepping over Ty Lue this season at Staples out.
That was like the best bad call in a long time. The best bad call in a long time. Just like this is the best bagged segment in a long time. This is why sometimes I got to roll telephone calls. You never know what you're going to get, just that it's not going to be good. Let's keep going. We go to Reading. Bobby in Reading. Hey, Bobby, how are you?
I'm pretty good, Jim. First-time caller, pretty excited. I just wanted to call to annihilate Tom Brady. Today is the luckiest and least talented quarterback in the top 10. The dude's been playing basically in this year's NFC East for his whole career. His first Super Bowl, he gets it there due to the tuck rule, and his defense holds the greatest show on turf to 17. Then he beats who? Jake Delhomme and Donovan McNabb in his Super Bowls right before Dan Quinn and Pete Carroll give him two more. The dude's a scrub. He's overrated. He's not as talented as half the league all time, and I have to listen to Skip Bayless every day call him the GOAT. It's disgusting.
Rack him, I guess, for the absurdity of it all. It's like the most absurd argument ever, and he made a pretty good argument. You know what I'm saying? Actually, no, I take that back. It's the most absurd take ever, but he made a pretty good argument for the most absurd take ever. So what do we have this segment? We have somebody saying that basketball is a sport, played by sissies, and that Tom Brady is, in fact, a no-talent hack who's the most overrated guy ever, who just kind of fell into six rings. This is what you get when you open the telephone calls, or you open up the phone lines and just bang telephone calls. See, now what's good about this, a lot of you are intimidated and don't want to call and think that you're not good enough. Actually, you are, because listen to the crap that we're slinging here. Listen to who's getting on the air. Pretty much anybody and everybody. So pick up the phone and call now. It's like an impromptu free-for-all. It almost doesn't even matter what you want to say. We'll put you on the air. Obviously, if I'm putting people on the air that are saying things like basketball is a game for sissies and Tom Brady is a no-talent hack who lucked his way into GOAT status, clearly I'll take a phone call from anybody. Let's go to San Diego. I mean, it is America's finest city, and I mean that. Let's go to Veronica.
War Lady Clones.
War Lady Clones. Veronica, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, Jim. I was just calling because I love your show, and I'm a new fan, and I was just wondering what stem cells do to your junk.
You were wondering what?
What do stem cells do for your junk?
What do stem cells do to your junk? Veronica, thank you very much. That's a great question. I've never done it, Veronica. My next podcast guest has, Ben Greenfield. And you'll have to listen to find out. I personally do not have experience with stem cell. I really do not have experience with injecting my junk with stem cell. I don't have any experience with injecting my junk with anything. I'm going to stop. Man, I would love to say what just popped into my head. Anyway, what's popping, Twitter? We love new listeners. That's Veronica in San Diego. Veronica, thank you so much. In case you're joining us late, why she asked that? I have a guest that, among other things, has experimented with lots of different things, including injecting his junk. And I'm not being flip about this. Like, he's a journalist, and there was a reason he did it, and he explained why he did it and what the effect was. That podcast is not live yet. I have no idea what it does. I haven't done it. Let's go to Texas. Johnny in Texas. Hey, Johnny, how are you?
Hey, Jimmy, it's good to holler at you. How you doing today?
Good, dude. How about you?
Good, fantastic. Hey, listen, war outside sales over 20 years. Don't know how I got into it. With a journalism degree, I wanted to do something like you, but that never happened. Now I'm knocking on doors for a living. Hey, Jim, I got some good news for the clones. 12 Woods coming back tomorrow night, 10 o'clock Central. The only problem with 12 Wood coming back is Kenny's getting bumped again. Kenny's getting bumped so often that even Amdy thinks that he's got it going on. Hey, Jim, last thing, I want to shout out to Wells and Jeremy. Man, those two dudes, those guys know how to really beef, like really beef. In fact, they know how to beef so well. When I walk into my neighborhood bar, the proprietor says, oh, man, business is about to pick up because the ladies are coming in.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
Johnny, no offense, bro. When you say you don't know how you ended up knocking on doors for 20 years, I do. No offense, bro. Let's go to St. Louis quickly. Rob. It's good to have you, Rob. How are you?
Good. Jim, love your show. Awesome stuff every day. Couldn't be more pleased to listen to you. I want to talk about the Raiders. All this hype about the Raiders, all this overpaid John Gruden, washed-up quarterback Carr, a team that underperforms against everybody else in the NFL, plays over their head versus the Chiefs. They make me laugh. They've lost to the Chiefs for the better part of 20 years. And when I hear Gruden's junk and all the Raiders dancing around the field and certainly Chiefs Stadium, I laugh my ass off. Have a great day.
Good job, dude. Rack him. That's a good take. Thank you, Rob. I appreciate what you had to say about me and the show, too. Thank you very, very much. I would respond, but I'm just rolling through telephone calls, having some fun doing it too. Quickly, let's see. Carlin Prescott tweets, is today the hack-off? No. I mean, some of those were hack-off worthy, but some were good. At Norton RVA tweets, love this new horrid take segment. It's not what that is. It's me banging telephone calls. It was impromptu. I did not expect it. That's the best time to do it. That's when it works best, when it's not scheduled, when I'm not reliant or dependent upon it, but rather I just want to do it. And it's spontaneous. Stucknut, quote, this is a really weird segment. You know why? Because I'm taking telephone calls. That's what makes it weird. Get your ass back to archiving, Steven. Back to the phones. Let's go to Niagara Falls. Diane. It's good to have you, Diane. How are you?
War Lady Clones.
Damn,
how are you? Not going to take too much to elevate these calls, but anyway, I just want to call because today is the 5th anniversary of the passing of the Big Horse, Cher Belief, who is definitely the equine epitome of Jim Rome. Maybe he was small in stature, but big in heart. I want to thank you so much for sharing the guts of gelding with him, with us. Love that horse. You could tell that you loved him, too, every time you spoke about him. And wreck me for the Big Horse. Thanks again, Jim. Take care to you and the clones. Everybody on the team. Bye.
Thank you, Diane. You know what? It's a really weird thing about the Big Horse. So Shared Belief passed away 5 years ago today. I got to be honest with you. I didn't know. Like, I know the day. But I never know the day. Like, this happens every single year. And James Kelly, only Ike, War Lady Clones, like she calls up to talk about it, and she's choked up already, and I'm choking up thinking about it, and old man Ike just can't wait to hammer War Lady Clones before she's going to talk about the passing of Shared Belief. Old man, can you not see the call screener? Like, you know what she's going to talk about, dude. Are you kidding me with that?
Good night now.